Hello, this is Cindy Gomez-Shemp, and this is an audio podcast of a discussion about race. Today's topic will be, Dear White People, Things to Stop Telling People of Color to Feel and Think with Regard to Ferguson. Today, I am here with my family. Lizzie, say hi.
Hi.
Nemo.
Hello.
And hello. Duke.
Duke, yes.
And so we're going to have this discussion because there's some interesting things that have happened with regard to Ferguson. Obviously, everyone knows across the country, but for those, if you have been living under a rock or something, there was an 18-year-old teen who had just finished high school, graduated, and was about to go to college in a week that was gunned down by a police officer in Ferguson. He was unarmed, and he was shot 6 times. He's a black man in a mostly black community, segregated, poor, with, you know, I believe they said a 46% unemployment rate among black males.
Yeah.
And so what's interesting about this investigation and how people are handling it in the news and the media is the reaction of white people to people of color thinking about, talking about, posting, expressing, protesting their anger, their frustration, their concerns, their fears with regard to the killing of this black man. And the reason I wanted to have this discussion was because something interesting happened to Nemo, which kind of started this discussion, and I wanted you to share a little bit about that without actually mentioning the name of the person.
Sure, the Facebook post, right?
Right.
Okay, so for the last couple weeks, actually, about Ferguson and police brutality across the country in general, I've been posting some cases and instances with cops being violent or, you know, or misconduct or other killings that have transpired. And as I posted, you know, another article, this person comes to my Facebook page and asks, could you please balance your posts about cops doing good things, because they do, you know, good things too. And that's paraphrasing it, but...
Right. So this is what... I'm sure that the person that posted on your Facebook page, I've had similar requests or comments from people in the public about discussions with regard to racism, with regard to sexism, with regard to issues of police brutality and, you know, the intersectionalities of those things. So what I'm sure that this poster did not realize is that we have seen these types of comments before. By the time that this poster said this to you or to me or to anybody else, we've already heard these kinds of comments a bajillion times. We've heard people tell us all sorts of things, which is why we're going to have a discussion today about what this list is of things we want white people out there to stop saying to us about Ferguson. And I wanted to talk to you a little bit, Duke. I wanted you to talk a little bit about what we're doing, not just as a family, but as the People's Press Project with regard to cop coverage.
Well, cop coverage has come out of Cindy going to California to meet with the National Assembly of the MAGDET, the Media Action Grassroots Network, to really look at what issues will unify our activism in nationally. And community policing was a session she went to, and when she came back, she was trying to figure out how we would connect that to our work. And when we had whose daughter was a victim of excessive force by the police department, she's only 15 years old, was accused of smoking marijuana, dragged from her sister's car, had her face bashed into a car, she was hogtied, handcuffed, screaming, and arrested unjustly. We visited with the family, and they caught part of it on videotape. And we slowed down that videotape to actually show her in that videotape, and it got aired on the news. And we decided that people need to know their rights. They need to know their civil rights. And filming the police is a right we have. So we are getting people together to, one, learn their civil rights and how to protect themselves and how to videotape the police in their work in the community, to hold them accountable, to make more transparency.
Yes, and of course, you know, this was a news story that appeared on television on various stations. It was on WDAY at first. And this young lady appeared claiming that she had been treated with brutality, and that members of her family had also been handled and also threatened with weapons at the time that she was arrested. So, you know, these are the allegations that she has made, and we as the People's Press Project also did a story about that, and it became national news. So mm-hmm. It's brought a spotlight on our community, and people are starting to have discussions about police misconduct and brutality right here in Fargo mm-hmm. and Moorhead. And it has caused a lot of tension, which is why, you know, it sounds, a lot of people get offended when you say white people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know that you and I have talked about this as part of a race discussion we've had before, but mm-hmm. The reason I say I'm asking people, white people, to stop saying these things is because it is very annoying. It isn't just annoying. It is disheartening. It is divisive. It is rude, because you would never expect someone who doesn't like what you're watching on television, or doesn't like what you're reading in the newspaper, or the kind of newspaper you're reading, or the kind of show that you're watching, to walk into your house or to come over and say, "Hey, I want you to stop reading that book. Why don't you read this one instead? Hey, I want you to stop having a conversation with your neighbors about whatever, because why don't you talk about something more important? Or why don't you like dump a bucket of ice water on your head?" Right?
Right.
That would never happen. But on social media, people have an open door, sort of, if they're your friends, right?
Right.
To look into your, what you're reading, what you're thinking.
What you're eating.
Right? Mm-hmm. What you are...
a window into...
your work?
Our digital home, so to speak.
Yes, a window into your digital home. And because they're your friends, they can come and look in your digital window, right?
Right.
But a friend that starts screaming through your window, or yelling through your window, or even speaking through your window to tell you how you should eat your food or what you should and shouldn't do, will probably no longer remain a friend. And I can especially say that that is true when people, white people, intrude on a conversation or an idea or an expression of black or brown brutality, suffering, death, genocide, rape, theft, etc. Because that is something that, as people of color, we understand in a completely different way that white people cannot, do not, and can never understand in the same way.
And it's true. I just gave that description of what happened to the young 15-year-old girl, I didn't mention that she's Mexican. I basically took her race out of it and told that story.
And black.
And
mixed,
black.
Mixed race.
And that, in all of this with Ferguson and any brutality, police brutality forced against people of color, white people don't want to talk about race. We want to ignore race, and we get very, very offended that we're called white. Although if we just neutralize everything and never talk in the context of race, you can't actually see what's happening.
Exactly. And so that is why we, people of color, spend a lot of time analyzing all of the intricacies of race. And we spend a lot of time looking at the outcomes for us. And what are the outcomes right now for us with regard to police brutality in this country since 9/11? What did you tell me earlier today?
There was a factoid by either a copblock.org or CopWatch, one of those two. They had a state of fact that since 9/11, 5,000 deaths have been noted by the hands of cops.
So 5,000 people have died at the hands of police mm-hmm. since 9/11, and roughly a black or brown person dies every 28 hours at the hands of police or vigilantes.
Right.
That is the level of a pandemic in our country, mm-hmm. of people of color dying at the hands of police. This is something that we should care to address. And especially if you are one of those black or brown people, this is of some great concern to you. If you have children that you are afraid might have guns drawn at them by the Fargo police, or might have the Fargo police mishandle their arrest or brutalize them, then this might be of concern to you. So that's why we started this cop coverage campaign. And I just want to go down a list of some of these things. And since Duke, since you're a white man,
oh, yeah.
I would like you to address some of these, the reasoning behind some of these things. From a anti-racist perspective, looking at what these comments really say. And then we can also comment here amongst the people of color about how this impacts us. Okay, so, and also, by the way, if you guys think of anything that you want to bring up in this list of things we want white people to stop saying to us, by all means, go ahead and add those. But the first one is, we want to hear the devil's advocate point of view. The devil's advocate. What about this other point of view? That can manifest in regard to the Ferguson conversation or in regard to cop coverage or police accountability or talking about police misconduct in a variety of ways. Among them is the comment that you see today. Can't you portray the good side of this? Do you want to talk a little bit about where that comes from?
Well, in Ferguson case, for example, I've heard white people saying, we haven't heard the other side. We have not heard from the officer. But there were eyewitnesses on the scene. We've heard from the eyewitnesses, but they diminished the eyewitnesses. They cannot believe the truth that's in front of them. Because it's horrifying. I think white people are horrified that we have a racialized society. We haven't dealt with it. Our institutions protect white people and help keep us white supremacists. And so when we actually see the truth, it really messes with our emotions and with our soul, and we can't accept it. So we will look for any way to not accept the truth when we see it. That comes from our privilege. It comes from our supremacy. As an anti-racist, you have to see that first. And those things that surface that you don't believe those people, you start looking at those people. I've never had cops do this to me. They must have been doing something wrong. Those are all protections that you fool yourself with to keep yourself privileged. And you're trying to see what's in front of you, but you can't. So you automatically look for another view that's going to diminish the truth.
Right. And just a day ago, maybe, on Twitter, people were talking about how there were at least 4 eyewitnesses to the Michael Brown murder and what happened. But some media, like CNN, or something like that, they posted like a voicemail or something of an anonymous white caller, I guess,
mm-hmm.
that wasn't even there, but was saying that Darren Wilson was innocent, but they didn't actually see it, you know? So it was like, you know, put above what the eyewitnesses, you know, were telling.
Yeah, and what do you think of the media coverage so far? You've been following this pretty well.
It's terrible. It's actually kind of funny if you don't think about the murder and the oppressive part. Like, I saw like a bunch of posts by police about, you know, they're looting and these black people are attacking police officers. And then I'll look and I'll be like, no, that's actually a lie. He didn't attack the police officer. No, he didn't rob the store. No, he wasn't, you know, he didn't have a weapon, nothing. But the media wants to give this kind of, there's two sides to the story. It's like, no, there's a majority of people on one side and like 5 white people on the other.
So like one of the things that we're seeing as people of color is that there's this like evidence that is being put out there as fact, or, you know, these different things that are not being said. You know, we still don't have an account from the police of what exactly occurred. The police report, which was requested by various news sources, shows no information of the account that took place. And the ACLU has said, through one of its attorneys, that is illegal. So we see a horrible lack of transparency. We've had 2 officers that we know of anyway, who have been taken off duty because of racist comments on Facebook and social media in videos, and threatening to kill protesters.
Or reporters.
Or reporters, exactly. And so, as people of color, we're seeing, you know, this stacked deck of misinformation in the mainstream media, and a lack of opportunity for people of color, because most of the media is owned by white people, a lack of opportunity for us to really have the deeper discussions of what is so disturbing about this, the cover-up, what we're seeing in the media, and how that's impacting us. And in order for us to deal with this horrifying reality, because it's also horrifying to us, as we see our brothers and sisters being thrown in jail, being criminalized in media, being killed by police or brutalized by police, we become terrorized. We become afraid as well. And we don't even have any place to discuss it. The only people that have a soapbox from which to discuss it is mainstream media, and they have the loudest bullhorn. Mm-hmm. And their voices are elevated above the voices of the people most impacted by this, the protesters, mm-hmm. the people of color. So when someone comes to our digital window where we are able to have a discussion in a safe space inside our digital home, and some white person comes and says, "Hey, we want you to use your own personal space and turn it into the circus that's in the media, turn it into the disinformation and confused discussion that is being had by white people about this topic." And that's not something that we are prepared to do. So please don't try to derail our conversation and bring in the devil. The devil has enough advocates. We don't hear anybody advocating for God. We'd like to hear some more God advocates.
God advocates, yes.
Amen.
Yeah. So another one. What's another one on the list of things you don't want white people to say to you? Here is another big one for me that I don't want to hear anymore with regard to Ferguson or police accountability. And that is, can't you find something else to worry about? Aren't there greater things to worry about? I was just on 630 Point of View, and we were having a roundtable discussion, and somebody there said, hey, there was just a journalist that was beheaded by ISIS. And that's not front page news. That's not the main news. The fact that we have what looks like the beginning of some kind of a civil war in a Midwestern town in America is supposed to not be front page news. That's astonishing to me as a person of color, because this is not the first race riot that we've had in America.
No.
In fact, this is not the first race riots that we've had in this area.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You were at one of them.
I was at one in Romkey Park in 1998. And in 1998, the police didn't have the weaponry they have now. They had a lot. They had their billy clubs, they had their shields, they had their helmets, they had their dogs. They lined the street with over 100 officers and declared martial law in a mainly Mexican community on the 4th of July when people were having a party.
On the 4th of July!
Wow, so American.
And it's very scary. What I've seen grow since then, the weapons they have, the equipment they have, the militarization of our police. And when people, like the person that posted on Sarah's page, says, can't you tell a positive story about cops? Or people saying, not all cops, is that I don't hate cops. I have a distrust for law enforcement. I have a distrust for the institution that is supposedly protecting and serving, because I don't. And most white people are oblivious to that. They believe that those officers are there for them, to protect them. And when they're hurting other people, those people deserved it. And those people are largely people of color.
But, you know, the other part of that is also the fact that, you know, we have a right to our own experiences, and our own experiences are vastly different from white people's experiences. I know for a fact that I have had a police officer threaten me with by searching me without any warrant or reason, by violating me, by violating my body, by touching my private parts, and then frisking me and sticking me in the back of a police car while they checked my license and registration. And for no other reason. I wasn't given a warning. I wasn't given a ticket. I was just patted down, had my humanity violated. And this is what white people don't understand, that stop and frisk that happens to so many kids and adults like myself, that kind of behavior dehumanizes us. And at the time that happened to me, I was a paralegal working for a law firm in Fargo that was at the time suing the Fargo Police Department for false imprisonment and discrimination of a Vietnamese man who tried to file a police report. And they wouldn't let him file a police report against a white business owner. And, you know, for us, we have to have a safe space to have a discussion about what's happening to us. Mm-hmm. And we don't need someone that's white, that's never had our experiences, coming into that discussion and saying, hey, you don't know what happened to you. I, as a white person, know what happened to you more than you do. Mm-hmm. That's rude.
Yeah.
Especially when it's coming from a digital friend. Mm-hmm. Because if your digital friends treat you that way, then, I mean, who needs real friends, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If your digital friends are willing to say something to you in the world of the internet that they would never say to your face, that person is not really your friend.
Yeah.
That person is a troll. Mm-hmm. That person is trying to derail a conversation. And I believe that that is a racist mm-hmm. and white privileged attitude.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
Because we do have a right to our own experiences and we have a right to have our discussions about it. Mm-hmm. Now, another thing that, you know, people talk about with regard to worry about someone else or worry about something else that's really disturbing to me as a person of color is we are constantly being told to not worry about issues of race and to worry about something else. Don't we have something better to do? Indigenous people have complained about these mascots, these racist mascots,
oh, yeah.
They're constantly told, you know, hey, there's one brown person over there. There's a person that's an Indian that disagrees with you. So therefore, shut up about it. And also, don't you have something better to do? And this isn't something that we get to talk about without interruptions usually. We are always being told to think about something else and to talk about something else. And no, we don't want to. That's what we want to focus our time on. And we have a right to do that. Mm-hmm. So white people, go right ahead and worry about those other things that you want us to focus on instead of worrying about the race issues in America. You can worry about ALS. Yeah. You can worry about the ASPCA. Mm-hmm. You can worry about insert your thing mm-hmm. right there. Mm-hmm. Go worry about that thing and post it on your own Facebook page. You know, be the devil's advocate for anything that you see or hear people of color talking about on their in their discussion posts. Put that on your Facebook page. Mm-hmm. Tell people about the injustices. Tell people about the hard work that the police do. Tell people about your experiences with the police on your Facebook page in your discussion with other white people that have your own same experiences. But do not feel entitled to shut down, to derail, to minimize a conversation among people of color because you don't have our experience. And if you do it, more likely than not, you will probably be unfriended. You will probably be removed from the conversation. Anybody else have a thing on your list of white people?
Yeah, pet peeve. Another statement that bothers me is that this police brutality is not like a white and black issue, and it's like, you're wrong, very, very wrong. I mean, historically speaking, that's all it's ever been about.
I think that's part of the problem is that, historically speaking, I find a lot of white people who will not look at history. They ignore history and recent history, their own lifetime. The police brutality, police have always been brutal to people of color. The police were developed to police people of color.
Right.
Our whole country has been founded on the genocide and elimination of people of color, slavery. That's our history. White people are foreigners in this land. And when people don't want to look at history for the lessons and where we've been, they can't see where we're going or where we're at.
I think it's an erasure of our history because we don't want to deal with it. You know, another thing that people don't read enough of is their Bible. As a colonized person, I had no choice. Every Catholic Mexican you see is a survivor of genocide because all the rest of them were killed. And we found ways to incorporate our spirituality in our Catholicism, in our worship of God. But we are very, very devout about our worship. And so I'm always astounded that such a Christian nation has no knowledge of its history or its religion, its Bible. That so many people who claim that they are espousing the values of this country with regard to the Constitution, the history of America, the forming of America, its foundations, or its religion, are normally very ignorant or have a completely skewed idea of what the Constitution and the Bible actually say. For instance, the officer that was just removed from duty in Ferguson, he has this hour-long video. It's up on The Guardian, I believe, is the newspaper that did the story. And he rails on and on against black people, against the president of the United States. He calls him an illegal immigrant. He says that in the Constitution, where it says all men are created equal, that's not talking about affirmative action. We have no right. We have no business creating anti-hate laws to protect people of color from hate crimes. That's astounding to me. I mean, this guy sounds more like Bull Connors than a modern day police officer. And the streets of Ferguson are very reminiscent of the riots in which they were, the Bull Connors of the police forces were pulling dogs and using military style tactics to repress a people that were very oppressed and discriminated already. So this is the kind of thing that we need to look at and root out in our police officers. We need to actually be able to identify when there is this deep-seated ignorance of history, of religion, and of the values that supposedly make up this country that we've been told about in history class and in Bible school, and it's not present. If we're not seeing it present, we have to be able to call out that hypocrisy as people of color. And I think white people should do it too.
Yeah, we need to learn our own history. And when we're challenged and we look at our own hypocrisy, we have to dig down deeper and really see the truth and see where we come from. And a lot of white people aren't willing to do that. They shut down and they just profess what they're already professing. And white people need to challenge that. White people need to challenge the police, because when it comes to police brutality, you can object, you can stand up for your civil rights, and you can get beat to the ground while you do it. White people need to stand up for their civil rights to other white people and to police officers, and to use that as a model for people of color and for the officers.
Mm-hmm. They have a much less, chance of getting beaten, actually. I mean, I've seen videos. I saw one where this white guy got pulled over by a police officer, and he started yelling at the police officer, and actually threw, I don't know what he threw, but he threw something at the police officer out his window, and he came out and he kind of did this, what, you want to fight thing? And the police officer started backing up and saying, I'm sorry, sir, I'm sorry. I just thought you were speeding. And he got away with it. And I'm pretty sure by then he would have been shot, but he's white, so he just got to do that and drive away. And his wife was yelling at the police officer too.
Yeah, because for most of people of color, the immediate anger or, the smackdown of any kind of authority person, whether all our lives, whether it's teachers, whether it's principals, whether it's priests, whether it's the how dare you, why are you acting so uppity, don't you know your place kind of anger that we would assert our rights, that we would speak in a loud voice. And that is why Black and brown people have to teach their children when they are in an encounter with the police to remain calm, not to sound nervous or scared, even though you might feel terror, to remain very quiet, to not raise your voice, never cuss at a police officer.
Never look them in the eye.
Don't look them in the eye. They might think that you're trying to challenge them, you know? Keep your eyes looking down. Keep a very calm,
demure appearance.
Peaceful appearance. Keep your hands where the police can see them at all times. Don't make any sudden movements, because so many of our young people have died as a result of that. Now with these Stand Your Ground laws, it's basically declared that it's open season. You can kill people of color with impunity, white people, because you have guns, because you can, because no one will come after you, because no one will punish you. Another one of the things on the list of my pet peeves is people talking to us about how we should be having these conversations. The being polite about it. If someone, and I've seen a lot of this, I don't think that it's wise, especially not coming from people of color that are trying to raise awareness and educate people about their rights and cop coverage, to talk with disparaging, rude, threatening, any kind of thing like that toward police. I don't recommend it. I don't and condone it. I think it's stupid. I think that it is rude. I think that it would violate a code of conduct for any organizer, also for any parent, or for any person that's really trying to change the way that police treat us. But I can understand why I have seen, after in the comment section of stories of police brutality, of people being choked to death like that man was by New York police for selling cigarettes, where he kept saying, "I can't breathe, I can't breathe, I can't breathe," and police continued to threaten the people that were videotaping, and even until the very end where they were screaming at the police, "I think he's dead, you killed him, you killed him." "Nope, he's fine." The police said he was fine. As people watched a man die in front of their eyes, the police lied to people to keep them calm, to keep them from reacting to the fact that they had just witnessed a homicide. And so, you know, people telling us that we have to be polite in the face of you watching someone die. And I've seen it posted a lot of places. Cop killer, murdering cops, F-Elise, things like that. Some of the protesters have been heard saying things like that in Ferguson, right? Mm-hmm. I have this respectability politics pet peeve.
Oh yeah.
The idea that in order to be treated with human dignity, or in order to be treated with respect, in order to be able to have the justice that we deserve as people of color, or the right to hold police accountable, or the right to complain about how we're treated, that it has to be done from our knees in a plea.
Right.
When has us being polite and begging ever changed the fact that these things continue to happen? Never. So why would anyone demand that? Can you explain that? What's the perspective on that from white people?
The white person's perspective is that you can't have emotion. You can't have pain. You need to be calm. And I'm also oppressing you. I'm above you, so you have to be subservient. That's what it says to me. If you have to approach a situation where officers are killing someone, and there was that woman who had a fight with her husband, or with their daughter, and the police came and took down her husband and strangled him, and he died. And she was not polite about it. She was very, very full of grief. When we see funerals in communities of color and in other countries, we see people weeping, pulling their hair, pulling their clothes, falling to the ground, and are we telling them, you need to be a little more quiet, because they're having emotion, they're having grief, they're in pain, they're being terrorized. People need to speak what they're feeling, and being told you can't speak what you're feeling. The white perspective is just to keep the dominance, to keep control. So I can have two white people in front of 100 people of color, and I expect you all to be polite and quiet, because I'm really scared of you.
That it's also incredibly cruel. Because we do have feelings. I mean, I know that there is, you know, inherent bias. I mean, there's tests now that you can take as a white person and as even as a person of color, and you can see that we all have this inherent bias against people of color.
Yeah.
The darker they are, the more the bias. Mm-hmm. And it's totally provable by science now.
Mm-hmm.
And in addition to that, there are studies that show that white people, when they are looking at people of color, the brain where it lights up, where the visual receptor would be, that lights up in the brain. Neuroscience has now proven that when white people look at people of color, they don't see anything. Their brain doesn't light up.
Isn't that empathy?
No, there's another study on empathy. Yeah. There's another study on empathy as well. Mm-hmm. And one of the studies shows that white people have less empathy for people of color because they don't believe that they have grief or pain in the same way that they do. They don't believe that they experience grief or pain in the same way they do. Now think about the implications of that with our medical, as well as our law enforcement. With our medical personnel in this country, as well as our law enforcement. And these are things that are scientific fact about how white people feel and think about us, mm-hmm. without even realizing that they're doing it. This is not a white person screaming the N-word at us, or somebody beating us or burning a cross in our yard. No, this is inherent bias. It has been basically, it has created mental patterns of behavior that have, I believe, damaged people that are white in mm-hmm. their ability to empathize, in their ability to feel, and their ability to understand or see or hear or care about black and brown people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There was at least two articles in the last couple of days that I saw pop up about white privilege. Like, you know, how to explain white privilege to a broke white person. Because that's the especially difficult white person to explain white privilege to. And
in today's day and age, that's a lot of people.
Yeah, and then another article was titled, White Privilege is a Virus.
Because if you're white and poor, you have felt everything a black person who is poor felt. Because, you know, you once had to pay a traffic ticket and, oh, I had to work so hard to get my house and no one handed me money when I needed it. And they just got that job because they're black. And it's like, no, you have no idea what you're talking about. You sound so dumb.
Well, a lot of times white people have nothing to compare to because it's surrounded by other white people. Their families are white people. Historically, they've come from Europe and they don't have a basis for anything different, and they can't see it. I encourage all white people to really become involved in relationships with people of color. I wake up every day, and I'm the only white person in our house. As majority of people of color every day, so someone says, have you ever been in a group of people where you're the only white person and you're in a group of people of color? And I say, yep, every day.
Good morning.
But I can go ask other people, and they're, there was that one time I was at a concert. You know, there'll be some situation that's long and past, or they had ran into someone at McDonald's and ate a hamburger with them, and they feel like they've been around people of color. And so I think that
association.
Yeah. So I really encourage white people to really develop real relationships with people of color, and to really experience something different to turn that brain part on again.
You know, and be open with them. Like, actually listen to what they have to say about race. Make sure they feel like they can talk to you about that and talk honestly, or else you're just going to have that brown friend that, you know, agrees with you and just like, okay, I'll agree with you, white person, since you're uncomfortable about talking about race.
And let's be clear. We do not talk about race when we're around white people the way that we do when we're talking amongst ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Right.
that's something that most white people probably don't realize. They don't realize that when we're amongst ourselves, we talk very honestly and openly about how we're affected by racism, by discrimination, by prejudice, and all of the effects that that has on our psyche, on our physical bodies, on our hearts. And we can do that in safe places where we're talking to each other because we don't have anyone minimizing our experiences. They're validating our experiences and they're sharing their own experiences too. That's when we have those conversations, that's when we can learn through our sharing of our stories what our successes and failures have been and how we can lift each other up as a community. Mm-hmm. Because it is a very oppressive experience to live under that kind of constant threat, under that kind of constant oppression that people of color face every day in all of the institutions of education, of justice, of employment, of statehood.
Yeah, I remember when I was in school, I was learning about race a bit more since I was getting older and you were telling me more about it. And in school, when I was talking to my friends about it, which were all white, you know, I had no brown friends for some reason, I realized that whenever I tried to talk about race, I'd always get diminished and told, you know, I'm really comfortable with you talking about that, Lizzie, or they'd look at me like, you know, what are you talking about? Or even stop talking to me altogether, like they'd ignore me and continue with their own conversation. And it hurt my feelings and made me feel like, you know, maybe they don't want to hear about this. Maybe what I'm talking about is like taboo, like talking about sex or something. Like, I shouldn't talk about this. It's inappropriate.
Yeah, white people frequently make us feel like that when we do bring up the topic, which is why we talk about it differently when we're around you. We're not going to force a conversation on white people they don't want to have, but we do have a right to have it in our own virtual and digital spaces. Mm-hmm. Because that is our home, mm-hmm. our digital home. Mm-hmm. You know, so if you're talking about freedoms here, that is a freedom that we have, a right to expression, a freedom of speech. Okay, now moving on. One of my favorites, or I should say least favorite on the list is not all cops.
Right.
Not all cops. And what that sounds like is basically what I said, you know, well, hey, by talking about all of these things that you're exposing and police brutality, you're disparaging all cops, and it should be said, or it needs to be said by a white person usually, that not all cops mm-hmm. are like this. And also, there's a lot of apologists, especially amongst the police community and people that work with law enforcement, that say, well, you know, this was just one rotten apple. This was just the isolated incident. This person didn't receive proper training. There was, you know, a problem in communication. There was, and all of that to me, again, is a minimization of the discussion that is being had and a derailment tactic. To focus instead on a training program. To focus instead on a miscommunication. To focus instead on anything but what we're talking about in the way that we are talking about it.
And I think that's a lack of understanding of white people, lack of understanding about the systemic racism, a lack of understanding about what racism is, what the definition of racism is, how people of color are affected by racism and how white people perpetuate it, and the systems that have been created with racism at its core. So well, they say not all cops, not all. I know a person, he's a really nice guy and he does a really good job. He's still part of a system that was built on racism and continues to enact that power over people of color. And so white people need to get in tune with what racism is and what systemic racism is, what institutional racism is, as well as the individual racism that they can relate to.
Yeah, and you know, the police or our justice system or our educational system, our systems of government, all of these things which are highly racialized because we don't have equal representation in government, in education, in housing, etc., etc. Mm-hmm. They are highly racialized. But in looking at all of those things which are very highly racialized institutions, they don't have to remain that way.
No.
Education can be different so that it can educate people of color too, successfully. Government can be different so that it can govern all of the people those that have been disenfranchised through the Jim Crow mass incarceration system of the militarized police, as well as institutionalized incarceration of mass incarceration of people of color mm-hmm. in this country. Those things have all contributed to us not having even an equal representation in government anymore in this country, because there's millions of people that can never vote. There's millions of people that by law, it's legal to segregate them. It's legal to discriminate mm-hmm. against them. And the majority of those people just happen to be black and brown.
Yeah.
So when we look at these institutions as people of color, we historically know how they've impacted us. And we also know that they haven't changed substantially, so we continue to see the same problems. And when we talk about those problems, and we're told not all police, we're not allowed to identify as and express as people of color the fact that in our experiences, these institutions have always mm-hmm. treated us and have always negatively impacted us as people of color disproportionately to whites. Mm-hmm. That's what we're trying to talk about. That's the discussion that we want to have, and we have a right to have that discussion.
Oh, yeah.
Any others on the list?
Well, there's one that really kind of irks me, and it's not only with this case, but a lot of them, but there's this kind of excuse thing where people say that the police had a right to kill him because, and you can fill that space with anything, but it really just irks me because someone has been died or beaten or something, and you're kind of make up an excuse as to why they should have been killed. And I just don't think that's right, because someone's life has been taken, their future has been, you know, erased, everything about them has just been crushed, and their families heartbroken, and all their friends are, you know, distraught, and you're trying to give them some kind of excuse for the person who killed them, and even avoiding calling them murderers and calling them, you know, well, they were, you know, they're assaulted, so they had every right to murder him. Or, oh, well, he was scared. He thought he was going to attack him, so he shot him in the face 7 times. You know, this blows my mind. It kind of scares me that people have that mindset and are so heartless.
Which also reminds me of, like, some of the comments that I see of, like, you know, they could have tased him, they could have shot him in the leg.
They could have fork him in the eye.
Do we need to hurt them at all, though? Really?
Yeah, black lives matter, brown lives matter. Our bodies, our physical bodies matter, and they have value equal to that of white people's bodies. Mm-hmm. And because of that, we don't feel that the constant aggression, the level of violence that we are subjected to is appropriate under any circumstances. We shouldn't have a system of justice where we have over 1 million people, mostly people of color, in jail for nonviolent offenses of drug possession. That is a travesty. Mm-hmm. Especially when you see that so many people of color have been made poor by corporate criminals, by white collar criminals. Mm-hmm. And the whitewashing of our justice system has meant that for those people that have disproportionately affected, criminalized, the banking system, criminalized our voting system, so that they can control more people of color and get rich off people of color, that those people are not arrested at all. They're not criminalized at all. They're not punished at all. And when they are, they're given a golden parachute. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, we're not even allowed to discuss the death of a person, the maiming of a person, the hurting of a person of color without white people apologists showing up in our digital window to tell us why that person should be dead and defending the person that killed them. We don't want to hear that in the moment that we are grieving. We don't want to hear what the devil's advocate has to say about why this person was killed or beaten or raped or tortured or robbed. Why do you think that goes on? Can you give us a perspective from white people why they have this reaction to defend the murderers or the killer, the robbers?
I think it goes right back to what we talked about earlier, is that we have been conditioned as white people in this racialized society to not see people of color as human beings. It's historical, was in our Constitution, we had slaves, we supposedly freed the slaves, we had Jim Crow, we have housing, fair housing issues, we have police issues. It has always been there. We don't see people of color as human beings. And with that, we will justify why a person of color has been doing wrong. They must have been doing something wrong. First thing, without any information, there's got to be something that that person was doing. Those people in jail, they were committing crimes. We're a land of laws, and you just need to obey them. If you just don't do anything bad, nothing will happen to you. That's a white person's mantra for white people.
Right. So white people out there listening, check yourselves. When you see yourselves doing these things, as Duke has explained, you're on a slippery slope. You're discriminating against, and you're trying to oppress people of color by your stopping their conversations. Mm-hmm. But with all of these different derailment tactics that we've discussed today, that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to oppress someone and shut them up when they're grieving about something that you have never had to experience. And I would politely request to end this podcast that white people stop doing that to us in our digital spaces, because we don't need that. We don't want it. And as I'm going to do, and as I recommend that all other people of color do when that happens to them, we don't have to accept it. We can close our digital window to you. Friendship means there's a two-way street. It's a relationship between two people. It's not one person over another owning them. So as long as we remain friends, you will respect my digital space. And if I feel that you no longer respect me or my digital space, or see me as a person of color as worthy of having the right to express myself within that digital space, then I'm going not to shut up in my digital space. I'm going to close my digital window and my door, and I'm going to lock it. Thanks, everybody. That has been another podcast on race issues for KPPP FM. Thanks.